Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Vamos, Mexico. I don't know who you're rooting for in the World Cup, but the Bells household is all in on CONCACAF. I grew up as a multi-sport fan, and if you're a fan of, say, just wildly using a hypothetical here, the Iowa Hawkeyes, you're rooting for the other Big Ten teams in bowl games in the NCAA tournament. As much as I hated Wisconsin in that game at Camp Randall Stadium, I want them to punk Oregon in the Rose Bowl or whatever. That's my framework for the World Cup. I'm watching for fun, and I'll be picking favorites based on how appealing the style of play is for teams who show up at the tournament. But if I'm being honest with myself, I want CONCACAF to represent at the World Cup. I want Mexico, Costa Rica, and Panama to go to the semifinals. And what that means, realistically, is I'm rooting for El Tri and the Ticos, because Panama getting out of the group would be a miracle. Who are you rooting for, Greg?
Well, I root for Mexico every World Cup, but it's because I'm half Mexican. So I'm definitely pulling for Mexico. I don't really have any allegiance to CONCACAF the same way you do. I don't know that the conference brand sort of parallel plays out here, mostly because we can't recruit the players the way conferences can use sort of that rising tide lifting all boats to help the recruiting base. In fact, I feel like it's kind of the opposite in global soccer. If Mexico has a lights out World Cup, I feel like we can say goodbye to a couple of dual nationals that are going to end up on the Mexican side in 4 to 8 years.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I don't think you can argue that there's no benefit to the rising tide. If Mexico and Costa Rica are really good and they improve their global brand, then the U.S. has better competition regionally. We want the competition to be as good as it possibly can be, and we want the competition to be viewed as global players, right? I mean, we want European fans to be scared a little bit of Mexico and Costa Rica because of what they did in the 2018 World Cup.
Okay, so we want sort of the whole CONCACAF minnow phrase to fall out of regular soccer parlance?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll grant you that. I think that'll apply more to Costa Rica than to Mexico. I feel like Mexico is an established, pretty firmly established in the global hierarchy. What, they've been to 6 straight rounds of 16. Everyone kind of knows who they are, and I don't think they're light on, say, resources or development base. Costa Rica, though, I think is a completely different story, and we might be sort of in the midst of Costa Rica's emergence as that global player. It was kind of, maybe everyone chalked it up as a bit of a fluke in 2014, but they were one shootout away from the semifinals of the World Cup, mm-hmm. which is pretty incredible. And then through the 2017 qualifying cycle, they comfortably qualified with a win. I mean, they're well ahead. Would you say they're ahead of the United States at this point?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's at least at the moment. Isn't it true we've never gotten points in the Hex?
At Costa Rica?
Yeah.
So they've turned that, and they've even made progress on that by then taking 3 points in the U.S. So in their away game against the U.S., they managed to take those 3 points. I think it's very possible we have fallen behind Costa Rica. Not that the future is all grim for the U.S., but just that Costa Rica's future has a potentially very bright. So if they get through this World Cup and find themselves in the round of 16 again, it could be sort of an ongoing story for Costa Rica to be on the same level as the U.S.
My sense of how the rest of the world views Costa Rica's performance in 2014 was that they think it was a fluke. Wouldn't you say that?
Well, so here's the thing. Costa Rica in 2014, they were in a group that would have been called the group of death, but for Costa Rica being in it. They were in a group with Uruguay, Italy, and England. And, you know, those are three traditional powers. They win the group. They advance. And so it's hard to call that a fluke. And then they get a great draw. They get Greece in the round of 16 and win a shootout there with on the back of their exceptional goalkeeper. But then they take Netherlands to a shootout and then lose that. Netherlands takes Argentina to a shootout, and Argentina ends up in the final. So transitive property-wise, Bells, Costa Rica was very close to the final of the World Cup.
Yeah, there were a couple of Brian Ruiz golazos from lifting the trophy.
That's a handsome man they have attacking for them, and who will be attacking for them again. I feel like he's going to have, this is his chance to have sort of a Diego Forlan World Cup.
Yeah, he's had a good run of form lately too. He was kind of in and out of the lineup for his club, but he's been starting a lot lately and getting on the score sheet. So that's really good news for Costa Rica.
But yes, I would agree with you completely. I don't think anyone around the world, because it was sort of their first go at it, that no one around the world is thinking that this is going to be a regular thing from Costa Rica. I think we should have a different perspective because that probably was a lot of U.S. fans' view on it, as it being maybe just because it was in Brazil, it was kind of played to their strengths.
You mean like climate-wise?
Yeah, climate-wise. But over the last cycle, I think they've sort of at least backed up that success from 2014. And if they do it again this year, I think you have to sort of concede that unless this is just a real, very golden generation or that Keylor Navas is just that good, they're at this point, there's a big three in CONCACAF and not just sort of the big two and yeah. Costa Rica lagging behind.
Or maybe there's a big two and the U.S. isn't in it.
Well, sure, the U.S. at this point, though, has had a better track record over three World Cups than Italy.
Yeah, that's true. But switching over to Mexico, you know, it's true that they're sort of thought of as an established contender. They always get to the round of 16. I could be wrong, but I don't think they've ever been to the quarterfinals. Have they?
It's been like they were in 86 when it was in Mexico, and I think they were back in like the 30s. Okay. When it was also in Mexico. I think they're only two times past the round of 16 is when it was in Mexico.
Okay. So yeah, they talk about that fifth game. What is it, Cinco Partido? And they can't get there. Their chances this year. Well, before we move on to that, say both nations go to the quarterfinals, which is a stretch goal, I think. Then isn't there just so much more opportunity for the U.S. in the next qualifying cycle? Like a win over those teams means even more than it would have otherwise. Not just for sort of national morale here in the United States, but in the ELO rankings and the FIFA rankings and, you know, all that jazz.
I mean, yes, that's true. But we got to get, we have so much ground to make up in ELO and like, we're never going to make the first pot. So we're talking about the difference between the second pot and the third pot. If the draw even stays the same for the next World Cup, I don't know. I mean, does Alabama winning a bunch of championships somehow magically make Arkansas better, or does it just give Arkansas a little bit more attention because they're going to get three marquee games a year? It definitely adds a marquee match. That Costa Rica game at home now becomes is sort of more perilous. But I don't know that it helps the U.S. quality. Like, does it make our players somehow better? Does it add to their motivation? I don't know that it somehow has a direct result. Just because there's two quarterfinal teams in our region.
I would say though that Alabama winning a bunch of titles does make Arkansas look better when Arkansas goes undefeated in the SEC. You know.
Sure. So there's that sort of reverse. I feel like there's that sort of reverse causation. Like. Arkansas would have to be very good to do that. So it wouldn't matter. It would matter in the perception, but for us to go down to Costa Rica and win, and go to Mexico and win, yeah, that would be impressive if those are quarterfinal teams. But the U.S. we'd already be good to do that. So are we even close to that right now? Probably not.
Yeah, no, we're not. Sad. I mean, the one argument, well, so I'm not like swayed by the argument that, oh, Mexico is America's team. I mean, I know the numbers show that they are, but numbers schmumbers. I mean, the U.S. men's national team is America's team, or the U.S. women's national team. The Mexico national team is Mexico's team. I don't buy all that crap, but I do think that the pragmatic case is strong. We want the region to be as strong as it can be. We want our wins in the Hex or, you know, in the Gold Cup to be more meaningful. The more meaningful they are, the better. Even if we lose to a good team, that's better than playing a bunch of bad teams. And And I think in that sense, Costa Rica's rise is good, and we want them to rise even further. That's my view on it.
Oh, I'll give you that. And I'll say too, I think the other indirect way this will benefit is it'll kind of add a little bit more evidence that MLS is a quality league. I think a lot of the Costa Rican players have spent some time in MLS. You got Vela and the Dos Santos brothers in MLS right now. If those guys go on and have a really great World Cup run, like, does that sort of add to, you know, maybe that makes it more likely that Chicharito is playing in the MLS. And if we can make MLS better, then that helps if our domestic league's better, that helps our national team. So there's definitely those indirect sort of benefits.
Yeah, I can just see Julian Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim. He's like watching the World Cup. He's like, ooh, this Carlos Vela fella is really good. And then he like looks up MLS on Who Scored, and he's like, oh, Tyler Adams is, you know, he's got a really high rating on Who Scored. Let's sign him this summer. That's my fantasy.
So you think it's going to be good to get players out of MLS? I'm talking about getting the players into MLS.
Well, yeah, we want some players in, but we want some players out too, right? I mean, that's kind of
right. If it's a great league, that they're both happening, right?
Yeah. The one thing, and we talked about this offline a little bit, but the one thing that gives me pause about pulling for Mexico in particular in the World Cup is I watched Efra Alvarez last night, the 15-year-old who grew up in Los Angeles, who seems pretty much committed to Mexico, the Mexican national team. Watched him score a hat trick last night in USL at the age of 15. And it was just straight dirty stuff. I mean, he looks really good. He makes all these other prospects that we talk about kind of pale in comparison.
If you had your choice between Alvarez or Andrew Carlton tomorrow for a game, Bells, for a World Cup knockout game.
Alvarez, I mean,
all right.
Can anyone disagree with me?
I don't think so. I was just going to see if you would disagree with you.
No, I mean, I'm still very high on Carlton, but Alvarez, we talked about this goal in particular, the second of the three. He receives it on the right wing. He holds a guy off on his back, and then he just ends another defender's life with a juke just inside the box. And then he hits the ball with his left foot, a bending worm burner at the far post that sort of slides behind a defender who's moving across his field of vision. So he had to see that space when it wasn't there.
And yeah, tiny window that wasn't open when he started the shooting motion that opens up as he's striking the ball. It was very Bergkamp-esque.
Yes. Oh, it was so beautiful. And he's only 15. He doesn't even turn 16 for another few months. I don't know. So all that to say, if Mexico goes to the semifinals, then you know, like you said, maybe we could kiss a few more of these young prospects goodbye, even the ones who haven't already pretty much committed to Mexico. And maybe, you know, this is a huge maybe if Mexico goes 3-and-out in the World Cup and the U.S. looks really impressive in its friendlies against France and Ireland, say we beat France, show an identity, maybe somebody could convince Efra Alvarez to switch allegiance a la Jonah Gonzalez. I don't think that's going to happen, no matter what happens, but I guess that's the case that comes to mind when I think, like, is it a bad idea to hope for Mexican success in the World Cup?
Yeah, and that's, as trite as it sounds, like, the World Cup is really magic. If you're watching, you know, 2010 when Landon Donovan scores that goal, like, that will move you. And for a 17-year-old, 16-year-old sitting on the fence who loves both teams, like, that kind of a moment could literally, like, make you want to wear the Mexico shirt above all else. So, you know, if Alvarez is sort of already in the bag for Mexico, fair enough. But, like, a Nuli Yanez, there are kids out there who this could be the summer of Mexico for them, and that could seal it. Which, again, you know, fair enough. Like, I would I'd be happy for that because I'm a Mexico fan as well. But that's the rub. This is great branding for Mexico.
Does the magic work in reverse? Is there a black magic when you have a World Cup like the U.S. had in 2006, where you just look absolutely hapless? If Mexico goes 3-and-out and looks, you know, is a total disaster, they get beat like 5-0 by Germany in their first game and then never really recover their verve, does a 17-year-old kid say, oh, man, I don't know if I want to play for that national team? In the, you know, as a mirror opposite of like seeing Carlos Vela score a game winner against Germany.
In the dying moments against Germany. Versus Brazil in a knockout game. I could see that. I could see like it would be like complete disarray, like mutiny on the field, it's like what France went through a few World Cups back, where players are getting like kicked off of the team mid tournament, where essentially the entire organization. And Mexico's had moments like that in their past with, I think, Gio and Jonathan Dos Santos were barred from the team for a while, but it would take something like that, I think, on that scale. It wouldn't just be three lackluster performances and an elimination.
Yeah. The disarray for France in the last World Cup really sank their program, didn't it? They're screwed. I'm glad we're not in their situation.
That's the lesson, I think. I remember when Mexico were in that disarray, however long ago that was, everyone talking about how the U.S. had surpassed them and left them behind. And a year and a half later, seems to not be the case.
Let's talk about Mexico's chances. We've both done a modest amount of research. What are their chances in this World Cup of getting to the quarterfinals? Let's talk about their group first.
Yeah, let's get them out of the group first. And I think they get out of their group. They've long been experts at managing a group, playing for the right result in the right game. It's a tough draw in the order of the games to get Germany first when Germany, you know, will want to get a result. We were fortunate in 2014 to get Germany last when they'd all but gone through already, and we didn't have to worry about them racking up four goals the way they did against Portugal. So Mexico get Germany first, which I think is a disadvantage. They're essentially trying to win a three-team group between them, Sweden, and South Korea, because I think you just chalk up Germany as group winners. Am I safe to say that?
Yeah, I mean, I think anything could happen. Teams as big as Germany have struggled in World Cups past. Not Germany, though.
Germany's youth team beat Mexico 4-1 in the Confederations Cup.
Yeah, but that game was a lot closer than it looked. I mean, I know, 4-1, a lot closer than it looked. But it was. I think the scoreline was deceptive. I'll just say that.
That's fair. Germany, though, are capable of deceptive scorelines to the tune of 3-7 goals ahead of what the game looks like, ahead of the eye test.
Yeah. Yeah, Germany's. I'll agree with you. Germany's going to win the group.
So then they've got Mexico. Then have to navigate Sweden and South Korea. And again, you could if you steal a point from Germany, you could still essentially understand that they're going to win the group, but that point would be massive. So. Mexico fully capable of maybe nicking a point there. Ghana did it against Germany 4 years ago.
I mean, let's be honest. Mexico's capable. Mexico has the horses to beat Germany if the stars align. It's probably not going to happen. But.
No, that's true. There is a chance. I think Mexico's chance of beating Germany would probably be about the same as Germany's chance of winning by 4-plus goals against Mexico.
Okay, yeah.
That's my thoroughly scientific analysis of those percentages.
Inarguable, yeah. So South Korea and Sweden, I mean, Sweden's a tough team to break down, right? And
they are if you're like not good at breaking teams down, but Mexico, I think, are actually pretty good at breaking teams down. So I think I think it's a good matchup. I think Mexico Sweden is a good matchup for Mexico.
Okay. So they win that one, and then South Korea. I gotta be honest. I don't know too much about them. I know they have that son at Tottenham who is sort of the unsung hero on that team. But I don't know much else about him. Do you?
No, I don't. I'm gonna sort of just use past performances to say, I'm gonna say that Mexico comfortably handle Sweden and South Korea to advance in second place in the group.
Okay. Now that is contingent on Juan Carlos Osorio sorting out the defense for Mexico, because they got some issues there, right?
Yeah, so I kind of am going to say it's not, though. I'm going to kind of say that, again, they're just one of those teams that their defense can be a shambles. I thought in Confederations Cup their defense was a shambles, and they still, you know, they're still going to advance because their attack is just really good. And their defense isn't called on that often because of how competent they are with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I think their defense, again, it could be exposed against Germany badly, but I don't think it'll translate against Sweden and South Korea to poor results, just because they're really good with the ball. Their attack is really good, and they have so many different combinations that I'm going to say it will be difficult for Osorio to get the attack wrong. Like, he could start guys that you were hoping wouldn't start, but they're still good attacking players.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll go through those guys soon, I'm sure.
They did have the high-profile injuries to Carlos Salcedo and Nestor Araujo, but it looks like Salcedo is back, and he can play right back in a pinch. And Miguel Layún is a quality player who can play left back or right back. And then, even though Araujo is a loss at center back, they've got Oswaldo Alanis and Hugo Ayala, who plays for Tigres, who can sort of step up at center back. And then they, of course, have Hector Moreno at Real Sociedad. So, I mean, they got a lot of they do have depth when you – I mean, when you're used to looking at, like, a U.S. roster and sort of picking
right
over it, and then you look at Mexico roster, you're like, dang, they got some players who are marginal on their national team roster who would be kind of locks for a U.S. national team.
Exactly. So I feel like even if it's like a Moreno-Ray center back pairing, again, I just think those guys will be enough given their attack. And I don't think their fullbacks have to be elite defending fullbacks, because that just won't be what they'll defend by attacking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be good enough to get out of the group.
I know the chances of them beating Germany are very low, but boy, it would be nice if they could, because because if they end up second in the group, they're almost certainly playing Brazil in the round of 16, which Brazil's in a pretty weak group.
Yeah, hard to imagine Brazil not winning a group against Switzerland, Costa Rica, Serbia.
Yeah. So they have a really tough path to the quarterfinals. They either have to beat Germany or Brazil.
That's a good point. I don't think any manager would sort of think of it like that and say, all right, well, our chances are better beating Germany, so we're going to go all out for that win to win the group. And you never know, if Mexico do somehow steal a tie against Germany, then all of a sudden it turns into like a goal scoring contest to win the group. But no, I think we're looking at Mexico Brazil in the round of 16, and that sure sounds like another textbook case of Mexico going out valiantly to a world power.
A world power sort of at the peak of its powers at the moment. Yeah, that's going to be tough. Let's talk about their attack a little bit, because I think there's a lot for American fans who don't watch a lot of Mexico. They're going to be fun to watch, and we've touched on.
You're going to name probably like seven guys here who would be locks to start for the U.S. if they were in a player pool.
Yeah. Well, we'll start with the midfield. It seems like, and this is one of the least exciting players, but Jesus Molina seems like he's zeroing in on that number six spot. It should be noted also that Osorio has played a different formation in just about every game over the past 6 months. So who knows how they're going to line up or who's going to play.
the send-off games hopefully will shed a little bit more light on what he really intends to do.
Right. But Molina's a big physical guy, technically pretty limited, but he seems like he's going to be the guy at the six. And then in front of him, you've got two of the best players in recent Mexican history, Andres Guardado and Hector Herrera. I mean, my understanding is Herrera is more of an eight, Guardado is more of a 10, who also plays on the wing sometimes. They're both in the Iberian Peninsula. I think Guardado's at Real Betis, right?
Yeah.
And Herrera's at Porto. Got any thoughts on those two?
I think they would be nailed on starters for the U.S. national team. I'd expect both of those guys to be starting. I don't know if Molina will get the nod, but I feel like if Mexico kind of goes conservative, he will for sure.
He's at Monterrey, and he's regained his spot essentially from Jonathan Gonzalez for the club, and has sort of kept Gonzalez off the pitch for the national team too. That leaves the Dos Santos brothers, who are excellent players, kind of on the outside looking in when it comes to the starting lineup. I mean, I know Giovanni's a little more of a shadow striker sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But I think John will start. I think Jonathan Gonzalez starts in that midfield for Mexico. Jonathan Dos Santos. Yeah. And I wonder if he will actually... I think he should start in place of Jesus Molina. I think it should be Guardado and Herrera and Jonathan Dos Santos.
Okay.
Getting nods in midfield. But I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I don't know if they'll play sort of more of a true six or not.
Yeah. Yeah, no one really knows. Jonah Dos Santos was probably the player of the tournament for Mexico at Confederations Cup. He was really good. And he's been kind of in and out of the lineup with injury for LA Galaxy. So maybe that's a strike against him, but you got to imagine he's on the plane. And then moving sort of forward on the field, they've got so much exciting talent on the wings. Chucky Lozano has 17 goals and 11 assists this season for PSV Eindhoven. If we had an American doing that, we'd be flipping our lid, man.
Well, I'm going to throw a cold blanket on it, or a wet blanket on it. That's, you have to do the Dutch goal exchange rate, because Altidore dropped 30 goals in the Dutch league. I think Bradley scored like 20 goals playing holding midfielder in the Eredivisie. So
that's true.
17 goals, it's great. It's better to score 17 goals than 10 goals, but that doesn't translate to, you know, a world-beating striker once you get out of the Dutch league.
What is the exchange rate? Is it one-third?
Oh, I bet it's two-thirds.
Okay, so he's still, we're still looking at 10, 11 goals, 11, 12 goals and 7 or 8 assists. But yeah, I hear you. Jesus Corona, Tecatito, hasn't had a fantastic season at Porto, but he can be a real menace. He's fun to watch when he's on his game.
Oh man, is he ever. So that's one who I think he's going to have a great tournament, and I think he'll do it in almost like limited minutes. Like, I don't think he's going to crack the starting 11. There's going to be some rotation in play with three group games and a short spell, but I don't think he's necessarily first choice, but I think he's in the plans. I mean, he's going to get those minutes, and I think he's going to put on a show when he gets in.
Don't forget Marco Fabian at Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. He's a starter when he's healthy in the Bundesliga, and he's sort of gotten healthy recently. And then Carlos Vela, who is a favorite of this pod, a delightful player to watch and also very handsome.
So good looking.
Oh man, what a handsome man.
Yeah, Vela's going to be star. I think he's first choice, and I think he's going to have a great tournament too. These attacking players are set up to look good because Sweden and South Korea aren't the strongest opponents, so I'm excited. I feel like there's going to be some really awesome Mexico goal highlights this summer.
And Vela's one to root for because he, you know, a great performance for him would be a global advertisement for MLS. I mean, I guess that's one way to look at it.
For sure. And Velo is a guy who was almost like he was struggling to find minutes in Europe, and he kind of got frozen out of the team, out of the national team picture. So to have him, I mean, he hasn't been frozen out for the last, since Osorio's been in charge, but to have him come back to MLS and sort of reemerge as a real influential player for the national team, I think it does speak well of MLS.
And they have good strikers. I think, of course, there's Chicharito. He's always dangerous, and everybody knows his game. But Raul Jimenez is a more conventional sort of target striker, and he's in form at Benfica. Started the last five games, has 3 goals and 4 assists in his last 8 appearances, even though he was kind of a bench option for most of the season. I'm excited to see him. Do you think he's a starter, or is Chicharito the starter? How's that?
No, I think Chicharito starts. And I kind of wish it would be Gio and Vela sort of as an attacking duo, but I think it's going to be Chicharito and Vela.
As the central players with Tecatito and Lozano on the wings?
Well, I kind of see Vela probably as like I kind of think of it, it'll play like a 4-3-3, whether it's called that or not. Mm-hmm. With Chicharito as the top, and then Vela essentially just given freedom to go wherever he wants.
I see, yeah. Which would be a good thing for us to do with Pulisic when we get back to playing soccer.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Chicharito starts. He's obviously super dangerous. I love Chicharito. Who doesn't enjoy his movement and his instincts and his finishing? But I think he kind of changed. I think he plays a different game than if you had Gio in there. Or the team sort of has to play a different game than if you had like a Gio Dos Santos paired with a Vela. I always call Chicharito the Mexican Brian McBride, which is not very accurate, but it's like just accurate enough to piss off all my Mexican buddies. They see it, and they're just none of them like Brian McBride, and it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Chicharito's starting if he's healthy.
Yeah, with Osorio, there will be rotation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then a player I've been impressed with is Rodolfo Pizarro at Chivas. Very smooth, also kind of a shadow striker rather than the sort of target man that Jimenez is. He's likely going to be a bench option, but he was one of the heroes of Chivas' victory over Toronto and CONCACAF Champions League. I know he's getting a lot of interest from Europe. So, you know, if the USMNT could throw a front four of or a front three of Chicharito, Vela, and Tecatito out there with Lozano, Jimenez, Fabian, and Pizarro coming off the bench, I think we'd be ecstatic.
we would take one of those guys and be ecstatic.
I know.
With our current attacking sort of direness.
And then 2 years from now, they're going to have Alvarez too. So.
And if they have a great World Cup, they'll have Ulianis.
Don't say that, please.
Something about, we're talking about guys being first choice and stuff. That also is affected by the fact that they have Germany first. Like you could see some sort of, you could see a non-first choice team against Germany or a team that's set up. It'll depend on what they want to accomplish against Germany, because the difference in opponent from Germany to South Korea is so vast. It almost doesn't, I guess, doesn't make sense to just say this guy's first choice. Like they might really play two very different kinds of games.
Yeah. Right, they'll be fascinating games. I mean, I can't wait to watch. Can't wait to watch those.
Mexico, Germany's June 17th.
Okay, put it on your calendar, everybody.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We want to watch that one. It's the early game. Is it? I don't know if it's the early game, to be honest.
Yeah.
I can't translate the time with things.
And then let's briefly touch on Costa Rica, which we're much less familiar with. I know I saw on Twitter everybody was really mad at Francisco Calvo for Minnesota United last night. He's our left center back / left back. I've always liked him, but he does seem a little bit mistake prone for his club. They've got Keylor Navas, who's about to win his 18th Champions League with Real Madrid.
I'd say we could say he's the most decorated Costa Rican goalkeeper in history.
I think we could safely say that. Yeah, maybe the most decorated player in CONCACAF history.
It'd be close. I don't know how many trophies Dos Santos won with Barcelona, but Navas is probably getting up there.
hasn't Navas been a much more crucial part of his team than Dos Santos ever was for Barcelona?
Yes, that is safe to say.
So the prediction for Mexico is they'll get out of their group in second place and then lose 2-1 to Brazil.
Oh, I was going to say then have a generation-defining win against Brazil in the round of 2. We weren't gonna. I thought that was where we agreed to go with Mexico. No, yes, that'd be the money wagering prediction, I think.
You got any? Do you dissent with the money wagering prediction at all?
I just feel like if they are gonna finally break through to the quarterfinals, like it's gonna be in this. It won't be against some. They won't get some minnow to, or not a minnow. They won't get like a second tier game. It'll happen against like Brazil or Spain or Germany. So let's say that this is the year that Mexico do it. They are confident in their group to finish second, and then they win a classic against Brazil.
Be incredible, even for me, and I'm not half Mexican. And Costa Rica, what do you think is going to happen with them?
Costa Rica are looking at Brazil, Switzerland, Serbia, which isn't, again, it's not a terrible draw, like to say, all right, well, we just have to win a three-team group with Switzerland and Serbia. So concede that Brazil will win the group. Are you capable of beating Switzerland and Serbia? Or are you capable of limiting the damage against Brazil so you're in a good place goal difference-wise?
Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to get out of their group. I hope they do, but I think it's a toss-up between them and Serbia, and I think Switzerland is a better team than Costa Rica, at least on paper.
I think they're going to manage it. I think they're going to draw Switzerland, and I think they're going to beat Serbia by more than Switzerland can beat Serbia. I think they'll be really savvy about like the Brazil score line. Yeah, just really, there will be a lot of gamesmanship involved in the Brazil game where, like, for the first time, like, the time wasting while you're losing is going to be notable. They'll take a couple of yellow cards for time wasting in the game that they're losing 1-0.
Yeah. Well, that'd be smart. Okay, so you think Costa Rica is going to get out of the group, and then they would face, I think they would face Germany, right?
Yes. So a couple of brutal matchups for CONCACAF.
Yeah, basically, CONCACAF is up against the two biggest favorites. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Unless, I mean, I don't know if those are the odds makers' two biggest favorites, but they'd have to be two of the top four after those. Who else is in it? Spain and France?
Yeah, Spain, Portugal. France, and Portugal, I guess. The fashionable thing to say is that Argentina's in disarray right now, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, they were in disarray last World Cup, too, I'm sure. Do we give Panama any consideration here? Their group isn't terrible.
Yeah, if Panama can beat England, I think that'll be worth it all for me.
That will be. That's really, out of all the CONCACAF teams, that's the one result I want more than anything.
Yeah.
Is Panama beating England.
That'd be wonderful.
And if I can get really greedy, I want it to be Panama beating England in like a match that barely matters, and both teams are eliminated. But they don't play each other last, so that can't. Like, I want it to be England could get through, and all they have to do is beat Panama, and Panama squeak out a draw, and England are eliminated.
Yeah, that would be glorious. I don't. Yeah, I think it's safe to say they're not going to get out of a group that includes Belgium and England. But hey, anything can happen. They're not a very good team. They're not a very good team, which illustrates that the U.S. is not a very good team either, even though we did smoke them in Orlando.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Panama will be, they might squeak out a point against Tunisia in very much a game that does not matter, where it could be Belgium and England have that group sealed up by game three, and Panama and Tunisia are just playing for fun.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we wrap this up? Any other thoughts on the CONCACAF glory that's coming next month?
No, I'm gonna I will definitely be planning my calendar around those games, and we'll see sort of where we stand.
I guess we should just I should make a programming note, which is that we're gonna talk about Mexico in the World Cup because philosophically, I do think CONCACAF success is in the U.S. men's national team's interests, and there will not be obviously any U.S. games to talk about in the World Cup. Not to worry though, there is going to be plenty of U.S. stuff to talk about over the next few weeks. We got three friendlies coming up, and rosters to discuss, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I will be excited about the U.S. friendlies and then Mexico, probably in that order.
You're half and half, though, you know.
Mm-hmm. I had like a bit of a falling out with the Mexican national team during the Luis Hernandez era. I just wasn't a big fan of El Matador.
But you're back. Osorio brought you back.
It was the fallout extended. The falling out extended through the Rafa Marquez era. But no, at this point, like Mexico is. I don't know how people. I get the rivalry bitterness, but like, how do you not like Chicharito? Like they're the Mexican national team at this point is so likable.
Yeah, I agree. I love their uniforms too. They're just the best. Mm-hmm. They're probably they're right up there with Brazil and Argentina and Germany as like distinctive national team kits. That's not the reason to like them, but it's just
it's a very good reason to like them. Don't sleep on quality of jersey. I had all the Jorge Campos jerseys growing up.
Oh really?
Of course, I was a goalkeeper.
You mentioned Rafa Marquez, who we have not discussed yet. There's some rumblings that he might be joining the squad too. Probably not a bad idea, right?
Well, yeah, he's transcended his villain status into like, what? Rafa Marquez is scoring goals to keep the U.S. out of the 2018 World Cup, so like he's aged out of being like somebody you dislike.
It's just Satan now. No, he's. I actually feel bad for him the way he's been sort of vilified by the Drug Enforcement Agency. When I see we don't need to get into politics, but when I see like an indictment against a foreign national for, you know, sort of indistinct ties to a drug ring, I'm like, yeah, right. That seems like total baloney. Probably had no idea that was going on. Anyway, just more American imperialism. All right, let's move on before I get myself in trouble. When we come back, we're just going to run through some news about Yanks abroad and Yanks in the domestic scene. Okay, we're back. First off, Weston McKennie secured Champions League qualification with Schalke. Another so-so performance, I thought, from him. Did you catch any of that game?
No, I missed all the games this weekend with a terribly sick baby.
Okay.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. He started and went 90. He was okay. He was good defensively. He kind of slowed down around the 60th minute, which has kind of been a bit of a trend with him. And he was a little bit sloppy with his passing, which has also been a little bit of a trend over the last few weeks. But hell, you know, let's not nitpick. He's 19. He's got the full confidence of Domenico Tedesco, who is, you know, arguably the brightest young coach in Europe right now. And Schalke is going to the Champions League. They're going to be second place in the Bundesliga no matter what happens this weekend. So that's...
Yeah, that's very much a time to look at the big picture and be very happy about that.
Yeah. Also, a stat I dug up this past week is he and Pulisic are two of only seven teenagers who got 20 appearances in Bundesliga this season. So two of the seven are Americans. And it just really shows how much of an outlier both of those kids are, not just for Americans, but just for any nationality. You don't graduate from the youth system of these big clubs right into the first team almost ever. Like, nobody does. Hardly anybody ever does.
No, that's actually a good little, that's a fun fact, Bells.
Yeah,
that's a legitimate fun fact. It could be a little bit discouraging about Josh Sargent's chances, but if he does it too, then suddenly, like, the U.S. would be like half of the teenage prospects in the Bundesliga.
Yeah. Well, although Pulisic and McKennie will not be teenagers next year.
Oh, nerds. Okay.
I think it is a little more discouraging about all the other prospects who are sort of working their way through the Bundesliga system, like Nick Tagliafico and Haji Wright, and, you know, Chris Gloucester has a contract with Hanover. A bunch of kids that a lot of people don't know about very much about. I just think the chances of them breaking through the way McKennie and Pulisic did are all very low. And I think, obviously, the numbers back that up.
Yeah. Yep. That's the nature of sort of the development inverted pyramid. No, it's not. It's the real pyramid.
The non-inverted pyramid.
Non-inverted pyramid.
You're just thinking about news leads, aren't you?
Yeah.
Pulisic had another off game for Dortmund and came off in like the 60th minute as they lost to Mainz. They could not wrap up Champions League qualification over the weekend. They play Hoffenheim on Saturday, I think. Yeah, Saturday morning. Dortmund just needs 1 point to qualify for Champions League, or they need Bayer to drop points, Bayer Leverkusen.
Right, so they need 1 point any way they get it, whether it's Bayer dropping points or them earning a point.
Yeah, and they're up against Hoffenheim, so it's very simple. Either they get a point or better, or Bayer gets a point or worse, and they're in. So chances are still really good, but it could go wrong. They also, if Bayer wins... This is getting tedious, I realize. But
yeah. Let's hear the scenario.
If Leverkusen wins and Dortmund loses to Hoffenheim, then Dortmund just has to hope that their goal differential, which is 19, doesn't fall to Leverkusen's, which is 13. So that seems like a pretty safe bet that Leverkusen's not going to make up 6 goals differential in one game. Could happen. Would be an absolute nightmare for Dortmund fans.
So yeah, so big picture is we definitely want Dortmund qualifying. Although, are we going to talk about how even if Dortmund qualify, like there's always that chance Pulisic isn't wearing a Dortmund shirt next season?
Yeah, I think we should talk about that. So the Liverpool rumors sort of resurfaced last week, and there's been other rumors which I think are sort of harder to put much stock in. But the Liverpool rumor seems like it kind of makes sense. I think Klopp has at least in the past expressed interest in him, and Klopp, of course, was a coach of Dortmund just before Pulisic broke into the first team at Dortmund. What do you think? I mean, we've talked about how, like, Liverpool drop 75 million on Pulisic? No, we didn't think so. But if Klopp wants him, don't you think he should go?
Yeah, if Liverpool move for him, from Pulisic's standpoint, I don't see any way you turn that down. Dortmund have sort of been treading water in all regards this year, and it's possible that next year they sink rather than regain their sort of explosive attacking form. So I would definitely go where there's all the attacking is already in place. Like the excitement's already at Liverpool. Go there. You've got Jurgen Klopp. Like, you're playing with Mo Salah, and I mean, that's where you go, right?
Yeah, I would think so. If Klopp wants you, then you go is sort of my philosophy at this point. He's you know, with the exception of Guardiola, probably the best coach in the world right now, and his style fits Pulisic pretty well. Liverpool needs winger depth. Now, Pulisic's not going to start ahead of Mane or Salah, but that's okay. They're going to have as long as they take care of business against Brighton this weekend.
Oh, Champions League football.
Yeah.
Either way, they'll have European matches to be scheduling.
Right. Right. And if they end up in Europa League, they're going to be gunning to win it for sure. So there's going to be a lot of games to go around, and I don't think, you know, people say, well, he needs to start every week. Well, he has started basically every week this year, and I don't know that it's been all that helpful to him, you know.
Yeah, I think it's about finding a great fit in for an attacker. I just don't think there's going to be a better fit than, especially for a Pulisic type attacker, than Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool.
Yeah. So, no guarantees at all that Liverpool actually does want him, but that would be a good fit, I would think, for Pulisic. I'm not sure it's a good fit for Liverpool, but that's a whole nother question. Another dangerous game from my boy Jonathan Amon in Denmark. His team lost to Bill Hamid's FC Midtjylland, but Amon almost had an assist, you know, had a pretty good shot on goal, and drew a penalty that was stone cold in my view, but wasn't called. Call him up. I guess there's nothing else to say about it from my perspective.
I you'll get no argument here. If Novakovic can get a call up because he's doing well in the Dutch second league, yeah, Jonathan Amon needs to be called up for these next friendlies.
Or Timmy Weah. If Timmy Weah can get called up, Jonathan Amon can get called up.
Mm-hmm.
A few quick USL notes. We don't need to spend a lot of time on them, but Andrew Carlton played a clean game last Saturday, which I think was sort of a baseline, has sort of been a baseline requirement that I've, in my mind, can he just put together a clean, reliable game on the ball? He did that in another loss for Atlanta United too. They're pretty bad. Ulysses Yanez scored a goal in USL. His teammate Efra Alvarez is gonna overshadow him probably for the rest of the season. But Yanez is doing a lot of good stuff. Let's just hope he doesn't switch to Mexico.
And Yanez is what? Is he 16?
I think he's 17, but just recently 17. Like a month ago, he turned 17.
Oh, okay, yeah, like an April birth. Yeah. 17 in April. Okay.
Excellent winger with a lot of upside. He's off with the U-20s this weekend. Or this week in Florida as they prepare for a couple of friendlies with Honduras. Hopefully those will be streamed.
So, real quick, because we have some of these prospects going through the Galaxy 2, do you feel like that's the wrong team for them? Do you feel like that they're not going to have chances to break in with Galaxy because of the way Los Angeles Galaxy have built their roster? You know, there's no chance that Ibrahimovic or Gio dos Santos are going to be sort of relegated to the bench off the squad in favor of a kid. Even a couple years from now, they'll replace those guys with other multi-million-dollar designated players.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're just hoping to sell off the kids? Is that sort of the trajectory for these Galaxy 2 players?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. I know that the Galaxy franchise comes under criticism for that there is really no path from the academy to the first team. I mean, I don't know that anybody's done it recently, made that leap.
No, who's the last one, like Villarreal?
Yeah, and then he's playing in some upper Midwestern team in the USL. I can't remember which one, maybe Indianapolis or something. Yeah, I don't know. I know they got. It's an interesting. I'd love to learn more about it because the coach of the U19 LA Galaxy team, or maybe he's the academy director, is Brian Kleben, whose brother is kind of a big pro rel voice, Gary Kleben, and they have they seem to have a really clear philosophy of training and coaching, and they claim, you know, they claim credit for Alvarez, Yanez, and Mendez, Alex Mendez, who is another young guy on that team. who I've also been impressed with. So that catches my attention. I'm like, oh, there's a little bit of a thread here, but I don't know how that translates to the first team. I do know Giannis is not a homegrown, does not have a contract with MLS. He may have a contract with USL. And the same is true of Alvarez. So.
Okay, so those guys, once they hit whatever age they need to hit, could be just on their way out.
Yeah.
The same way McKennie just bailed.
Right. I mean, okay. I'm not an expert on that stuff, but I think that's how it works. As opposed to Andrew Carlton, our next, who we talked about earlier, who is, who has an MLS homegrown contract that goes till the end of this year, I think.
Okay, that's our contract law segment for next time.
Richie Ledesma, who I've talked a lot about lately, got his first start in USL, played okay for the Real Monarchs as they rolled over Swope Park Rangers. He's also with the U-20s in Florida right now. Really excited to see if he and Carlton and Giannis and Alex Mendez can play together and how that looks in these friendlies with Honduras coming up. But final USL note, Gianluca Busio was in that game for Swope Park Rangers. He looks like he's gaining in confidence, and he's only 15. He looks like increasingly like a clever passer in the midfield, and somebody who's trying to do stuff. So that's good. He's put together a lot of the sort of reliable 100% or near passing completion performances for Swope Park already. He just hasn't looked all that threatening to me. Looked a little more inventive, even though Swope Park lost 4-1. It's like the scores of these games don't really matter to me at all. It's just about the individual performances.
Yeah. No, that's good for. It's good that if you've already seen progress from a 15-year-old over the a couple of games, because their learning curve could be at a really different angle than somebody who's already 22 trying to jump in these games.
Yeah. Yeah, Ledesma, the dream sequence for me was Ledesma comes in and just totally dominates. He didn't do that, but he looked a little jittery. But that's to be expected. He's 17. Bigger news in American soccer right now is Wayne Rooney coming to DC United, reportedly.
There we go. Wayne Rooney, he's following the Carlos Vela plan.
Except he's like not even close to as good as Carlos Vela.
No, he is not. No, I don't. To be honest, I don't know if that's the case. Like, I don't know if Wayne Rooney will come in and be. It's really hard to imagine that he'll come in and do like a David Villa in the league. He just doesn't seem to have that. I don't even know what you'd say he's missing. Like, over the last 3-4 years, he just has been such a shell of the player he was. And yeah. I don't think, before Davi Villa, I don't think anyone said Davi Villa is a shell of the player he was when he came over to the league.
Right. I don't watch a lot of Premier League, to be honest, so I haven't watched any Rooney this year. I just know he hasn't scored any goals in the second half of the season. Isn't that right?
Yeah, he's been dealing with some injuries. Everton have been a complete mess, so he's played in like 4 different positions. I don't think he's played forward or even like in the hole the second half of the season, so you'd expect his numbers to drop, but he's going to be a good MLS striker. I think if he were coming over sort of as a bargain, people would not have a problem with it at all. I think most people's issue with it is that the transfer or the dollar amount being floated is like the same amount that teams are paying for 25-year-old wonder kids.
Yeah, exorbitant is a word that comes to mind. I don't know if he'd even be good, to be honest with you. I mean, it's his legs have gone. Much rather see DC United pick up Bobby Wood or...
Yeah, isn't that crazy? For like a third of the cost, I feel like I would rather see Bobby Wood in a DC United uniform.
Or Balotelli. He's only 27 years old. If you want to shell out for him, fine.
Yeah, and you're at the point where you could probably get like two. You could get two of those guys for what they're going to be paying for Wayne Rooney.
There must be some marketing in the equation that fill the seats in the stadium and bring a name brand that everybody.
That's all well and good, but Balotelli is like the marketing god. Like, get Balotelli. You got like a guaranteed spot on SportsCenter every time he steps on the field. That's not true, but I mean, he has more of sort of that Ibrahimovic charisma. Where even if he's not doing well on the field, you've got this character.
Right, that's true. I just think like with David Beckham, Wayne Rooney is more people know who Wayne Rooney is than know who Mario Balotelli is among casual soccer fans, I think. But when it comes to charisma, man, I take you know Balotelli in a landslide.
Yes,
Rooney's got that little chirpy East Midlands accent.
You're going to upset all of our East Midlands listeners.
Well, you sound him and Beckham both. They open their mouth and you're like, oh.
That was not what I expected.
No, I expected maybe just a little more resonance. Speaking of dollar amounts, the MLS salary listings came out today, and we're not going to go through and read them all, but it is interesting to me that some of these young prospects we talk a lot about, they're making essentially like a entry level accountant's salary.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them are on those for like 2 or 3 year contracts, right?
Yeah. 75 grand for Ja'Cory Hayes, 85 grand for Chris Durkin. I mean, it's a good living if you're 18 years old, no doubt.
But it's not like it's definitely doesn't reflect their value to a team. There's no question about that. They're underpaid.
Yeah.
They'll be worth more as soon as whether their next contract is for their MLS team or if it's they get those offers from overseas, they're going to be making more.
Yeah, you got to imagine Durkin. I don't know exactly when his contract is up, but Durkin is going to be out of there, out of DC. He's got to go.
Well, and then Tyler Adams is on what, 150?
Yeah, that's with incentive, including incentives. I think his base salary is like 100 something.
So yeah, so Tyler Adams is going to be, he's going to be making, that'll increase by like a factor of 10. I mean, whether Red Bulls decide to pony up and pay him, I mean, Red Bulls would pony up and pay him, but there's always a possibility that he's just going to play out that contract so that he can get that European dollar. They use the dollar in Europe, don't they?
Yeah, I think they use shekels.
He's getting all these gold doubloons from those European clubs.
Yeah, the doubloon. That's right. All right. Anything else, Greg?
No, we'll see. We'll see everyone next week.
What are we going to do next week? We're going to do the roster?
Yeah, we're gonna talk about the roster we want for these upcoming U.S. friendlies, right?
Yeah.
And then we'll get super in-depth into the fringe players on Panama's World Cup roster.
No, we are not. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Greg. See ya.